So does anybody have anything that they wish to discuss, talk about, tell us dreams, tell us events, whatever?
I've got something I'd like to discuss.
Okay.
All of you will recall that Samurai was the past life that was said to have the most influence on this life. And I really closely identified with Samurai, named him Yagi. And there was a lots about Samurai that I really felt attached to. And then for a while, that when I grew troubled with the violent side of Samurai, I decided that perhaps Yagi had become a Ronin, and it would fit the story, because Yagi left Samurai school, so to speak, and in the past life reading, that's about where it ended. So I added to it in my own mind that Yagi went off to function as a Ronin. And a Ronin is an outlawed samurai that he kicked out of the order. They've done something to violate samurai code, and so they can no longer be called samurai, and they're running wild, or they run outside of the order of samurai.
Okay.
Yeah, for one reason or another, sometimes it's because of unacceptable behavior, sometimes they just rebelled and wanted out. But there was a way that a number of samurai went. And just a few days ago, Karen and I watched a movie on Netflix that was, I think it was called Ronin. No, 42. 42 Ronin, and it's a story. It's from out of Japanese literature about 42 samurai disobeyed the instructions of a very high-ranking samurai and set out to avenge the death of their leader against the expressed orders of the senior samurai. And the movie's based on all their wonderful planning and everything else, and they were successful. They avenged the death of their senior samurai, and then they returned home. And long story short is that because they had avenged treachery, the top samurai said, instead of treating you like common criminals and having you hung, because you had avenged treachery, I will allow you to die as a samurai, and that the samurai code was that you killed yourself. And so 47 samurai, but one, killed themselves. And I'm even getting emotional now when I'm talking about it. But when watching that movie, which in itself was a good exercise in movie making, but what really, really came home to me is that for all of the code and the discipline and the honor and dedication, samurai code is based very, very strongly on duality, the good versus bad, and like, I mean, two extremes. There wasn't a lot of gray, and it was rigidly adhered to. And I found myself, by the time that movie was over, I had tears in my eyes because I found that I had dismissed, how to put this, I had dismissed that past as anything that I would ever want to follow. And I've been thinking about that since that. And there is, at this point in time, I don't think there's a lot that I would like to hang on to from Samurai. That there, it was so duality-based and so violent that I just cannot and will not carry any of that forward. But as I was dismissing it, it was like I was saying goodbye to an old friend. And I really was sitting here with tears in my eyes, saying goodbye. And that these 3 or 4 days or whatever it is since we watched that and I made that decision, I'm finding that this is a whole huge shift in my own perspective. It's even hard to catalog it so that
you're
I can
fading.
Describe it. It's hard to even catalog the changes that I've been experiencing so that I could describe some of that for you. But it's almost like the hard-edged extremes that I was capable of experiencing have just faded away. And there's some place, kind of, sense of it is there's something kind of in the middle. And maybe middle is not really that descriptive, but it's that not living at the center of duality extremes is what I think I've been doing for a very, very long time. And trying to balance those duality extremes, I think that's been the nature of what I was living. And I thought, coming out of the samurai background, I thought that was very honorable. And that's what a samurai did, was balance those extremes. And I'm finding I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be caught. That's what it feels like, being caught and trying to balance those extremes. And I think maybe for the very first time since Roger talked about it, I'm beginning to really understand it and feel, never mind understand, but feel third option. It's been very, very profound. And I'm just getting a grasp on now what it's like to live not hanging myself in the middle of those extremes. I hadn't realized I was living that way. And I hadn't realized that I had found it an honorable way to live. But now that I've said goodbye, I'm experiencing something very different. I wanted to pass that on to you guys.
Thank you.
Does anybody have anything they want to say about that?
Yeah, but I'd just be talking out of a hole in my head.
Thanks,
well,
Andrew.
That's what a mouth
I'm
is.
Kidding.
That's what a mouth is.
What did you say, Andrew?
I'd be talking out of a hole in my head. It's my mouth. So I'll just say what I have to say, and I'm sure you'll know what to do with it. You know, I get the sense it sounds like, anyway, to me, I interpret that you're struggling with this a bit in a couple different ways. You know, trying to make a change, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. And also maybe like you felt sadness about this. I thought this, I don't know, saying goodbye. The thing that struck me though was, I just wondered if you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, insofar as, like Roger once, you know, told me, and I thought it was a pretty good point, you know, hell, even if you were a drug dealer, you know, at some point in your life, all the skills and the talents and the essence that you gained or you developed in that activity, even if you don't want to apply it that same way anymore, doesn't serve you to do so. Once you're living your emprise, your eternal self, or whatever, I'm sorry, I don't know which word to use, but you know what I'm saying, living as you truly desire, all those talents and abilities come into play in ways that you never thought of before and really move you forth in your chosen way of life. So, I don't know, man, maybe I would have gone a different way, but I'm not saying there's not another expression. I don't at all think you're stuck with that, but one of the big things that comes to mind right off the top of my head is the idea that samurai were, at least as I understand it, which is probably very good, they were known for making a vow and really being able to live by a code or a vow. And I have no doubt that if you were to apply that to living whatever choice or declaration or vow or whatever you desire, it would serve you. That's my thoughts. See, talking out of a hole in my head. I don't have a real clear fix on it, but that's my impression.
No, that's a really decent observation. And it's, and my sense of it, Andrew, is that I don't think I could ever forsake all the skills, the discipline, and the commitment and honor and all that kind of stuff. I don't think I could ever dismiss that from my life. But what I saw is that my interpretation of living that put me in the center of duality.
I understand.
And it's that I'm walking away from, or I have walked away from.
Okay.
I could never. Everything that I built as samurai and I built in this life, that was around the dedication and commitment and all of that good stuff, and discipline, and being able to serve a master without giving myself up, and that was one of the key parts of samurai.
Mm-hmm.
But the realization was that in living it the way I had interpreted it and in brought it alive in my life, put me right in that center trying to balance duality.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, my experience of that is it's a very painful way to live. That's what I saw so clearly when I watched that movie, is that as righteous as they could argue these various positions, there was good and bad and all that kind of good stuff that was going on, and it was well done art form, but it brought home to me that in my way, I have always tried to balance good and evil, right, wrong. And combined with a harshness that just, I don't want to live that anymore.
Understood.
Okay, then I would suggest this. I would suggest that you rewrite what occurred when he left the samurai. I would suggest that you take him to a place where he makes a vow to self, to his own masterdom, and that through that vow he serves in a way that is totally acceptable to you. whatever that might be. Because if I say anything, I'm going to maybe sway you in a certain direction. So I'm not going to say that. But I have some interesting ideas. And write it down. Make it your story and make it the way you want it to be. That way you take those things that are beautiful and honorable and talented and everything else about samurai and repurpose it into something that is beautiful and all those kind of things for the life that you truly desire.
Well, that's a neat idea, Misty. Because as you were saying that, what I had difficulty with when I was imagining Ronan after leaving samurai school, inevitably I would find myself in putting together the story in conflict with establishment.
Yeah, but you could have him leaving the country and going someplace else and starting a whole new form of life, a foreign life, foreign to what it was. And so a lot of times in dream terminology, it's just saying that you're taking yourself and you're placing yourself someplace other than the familiar.
That's very, very solid. Wow. I think that's a great idea, actually.
And then I'd love for you to, once you figure it out, to share it with us.
I will do that.
Because I think it'll be a good illustration for others to find a way to tell their story in a way that totally is as they truly desire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it never occurred to me that Yagi could do anything. Didn't have to stay in Japan trying to eke out a living and running into samurai all the time.
But that's what I'm saying about life in general. You know, you don't have to stay where you are. I mean, I'm not talking about physically, but I'm talking about the way you've been living. You don't have to stay there. You can totally take yourself to another place.
Like, begin again?
It is a begin again.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But it's a begin again, but taking with you all the talents and abilities and all those things which you wish to bring with you. Which is kind of like what Roger was talking about when we leave this plane, when we leave this existence, to take those things that we desire to make a part of ourselves eternally so that it's a part of us wherever we go, whatever we do, whatever we are.
Yeah, I see that connection really clearly.
Actually, that's a very understandable expression of begin again. Yeah.
Well, and it's important, I think, because there's a big difference between leaving something without knowing where you're going next. That can be very anxious. Or deciding where you're going and get on.
Yeah, going towards something.
The others.
Yeah, you're going towards
something.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound to me that Pat has got that yet, is trying to leave stuff behind, and that's, I don't know, that's a tough road to hoe.
I agree. I don't think that you should ever just leave something for the sake of leaving something. I think that you need to always go toward something. Anybody else have anything they'd like to say?
Why can't you just let it drop?
Well, it's the same thing as letting it go. It doesn't really get you anywhere.
It leaves you in the dilemma. You're still stuck in the same place. It's like living by default.
You haven't really made a choice. Not really. In fact, it's like that old thing he would say, like trying to give up your image of God. This is just for those who've been around forever living. It's like, in the absence of a clear new image, you're just going to go back to the old stuff. You haven't really done anything new for yourself.
Does that make sense to you, Sharon?
Yeah.
Okay. So does anybody else have anything they want to add to this? Or if they do not, then is there something that anybody else wishes to discuss?
I do.
You do.
I have nothing to add to this, but in the time is appropriate, I'll offer something else.
Okay. So is everybody else done with speaking about Pat's story? Okay.
Pat, are you good with this, or do you want to stick with it a little longer?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you very much.
Okay, Andrew, you're on.
So, last couple of weeks, I guess, was it? We were talking about Incipit a couple of weeks ago. People were talking about declaring, and I had some questions about, it occurred to me, it's like, you know, the statements were being shared in various forms, which is fine, but I found myself confused after a bit as to, wait a minute, what exactly are we talking about here? Chronicle K discusses Incipit in a way that, to me, was one of the best presentations of the idea of having a point of reference, a constancy in your life that I've ever read. I just thought it was the finest presentation of that ever. And then when we talked about declaring ourselves, or what's your declaration, I thought to a certain extent we might have been talking about choosing how you'll be alive. And I didn't know the difference between what it was that Incipit is, and is it, well, I know I could see what it was from the description, but is that, or how is that different from the golden thread of readings that we did in the early years of my involvement here, versus how is that different from choosing how you'll be alive, and how is that different from Emprise? And I spent like a better part of a weekend 2 weeks ago going over it to prepare for, you know, sharing on Monday night. No, we didn't meet last Monday night. And, which is good. I need a little more time with it. So does anybody have, I'll present to you guys what I dug up, you know, from files and stuff. But if anybody has a clarity, no sense to go through all that if you can just cut right through it. Do you know what the differences are between these four things? Incipit, How You'll Be Alive, Golden Thread, and Emprise.
I'd love you to teach me.
Well, I got information to share. The question is, after I share the information, is it going to make any sense?
We will find out.
Well, I have a pretty good idea of what they are, but I'd like to hear what you have to offer.
It's all your responsibility.
Thanks, Jared. That's what I wanted to hear. All right. So I just went in chronological. Well, sorry, I didn't go. I went by, I guess, is how I went. I can. Okay, so for anybody who wants to review this on your own, I'll just tell you the source material. Incipit is obviously Chronicle K, numbers 85 through 119. Good stuff. And from where I was, you know, after reading that with you guys, I guess what I was feeling was like, wow, that's enough. You know, that's a real simple, clear, straightforward, you could get somebody started and going there. When I got into wondering about these other parts, though, how you'll be alive, there are Monday. The recordings of this discussion took place in 2008, June 2nd, 16th, and 30th. So, literally, it was 10 years ago from this month. It eventually came out in articles 416 and 417, mostly 416. I gotta say, 417 didn't, to me, add a whole lot to it. And then Golden Thread, I don't have a source for you guys other than presentations I heard Roger give over here. So I'm going to pause and just check if you guys are with me or where do you want to talk about any of that? Send me an email to me? No? Okay. So readings back in the mid-90s when I got involved with this, Roger was full-on in readings and doing them, from what I can tell, better than he ever did in his whole career. This is like he was in his prime here. The big talk at that time was the golden thread. In other words, each life, each reading has, you know, one to three lives that are discussed in detail. The lives that have one or two lives will go on and just say, okay, there were many lives where you did the same thing. They don't go into details, though. The point was, if in each of these permutations, these different different facets, looking at yourself from a different point of view, each of those lives, you could pick up the constancy of a pattern of all your lives. You call that the golden thread. And the idea was that in living that, that was your God self in action. That was your, you want to do purpose in life? Well, there's your purpose. Live your greatest thing you can imagine, your greatest image of yourself, which is your image of God. And the reading gave real specific particulars that were beyond this lifetime. So it fit real well with whatever you wrote as your image of God, but it also gave you more maybe, like I say, specifics and particulars to work with in daily life. To me, that's a lot like Incipit, except that I know at one point in the last couple of years, Roger talked an awful lot about the readings were just your loner self, this past lives of your body, your ancestors, your loner self. And in that regard, it seemed to me he was trying to move out of that because I think he thought that just keeps you in your loner self.
Well, also the difference between Golden Thread and Incipit is Golden Thread is looking back at. Incipit is at the beginning of.
Okay, there's a good point. Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you. Are they different?
Well, Incipit is taking, you know, the first real thought and then using that as a reference to evaluate basically everything else that comes. Golden Thread is looking back saying, from all the things that have happened, what is that thing that runs through? So one is coming from the one end and the other is coming from the other.
So looking back from all the things that happened, what again?
Misty?
Yeah.
How did you call Incipit? The golden thread is looking back at, and the Incipit is?
At the beginning of.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So Incipit, you put everything relative to it so that you're using that to pull everything together. Golden thread is, there must be something here that's holding this all together. What is that?
Oh.
To me, the golden thread was always the commonality of all those lives.
Yes, that's true, but it's looking back at them, whereas Incipit is
before
they occur.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So So I guess that then answers my question as to why Incipit is in the Book of Origins. I was wondering about that, because it didn't seem to be different that much to me than the golden thread, but now I do see what you're saying. My question is, does one work more better than the other?
Well, it depends on where you are in the journey.
Okay.
So Incipit is closer to a declaration?
Yeah, well, so was... Right, that was the point of... Hang on a second. Sorry. sorry, I had to sneeze. That was the point of all these readings. Roger would say afterwards, well, you know, get you to declare now. You know, or it back in Pat's day, it was make the vow. V-O-W, Simone, it's like a promise.
Okay,
I think he was always...
But it was kind of like understanding these things about yourself. How do you choose to be alive?
Okay.
I think that's closer to what he was doing.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you ask anybody that had a reading, and they would say, it was just smack on, it was me.
Yeah, exactly, right.
So, in knowing these things about yourself, call it the golden thread if you will, but in knowing these things about yourself and your basically patterns, how do you now choose to be alive? Because it's not saying you have to follow that pattern.
Right.
Because you could at any time, you know, go another direction, choose another way to go. Whereas Incipit at the beginning is saying that everything is relative to this thing and nothing takes you off of that Incipit.
Okay, so my question is, I get that. Do you think that they function? I mean, do you think that the effect is any different?
Yes.
You pick up one in the middle of your life and say, God damn, I'll live that. And everything starts swimming along. You decide one, and I'll say the difference that to me is obvious is the reading presents to me, and I say, okay, great, I'll live that. The Incipit is, by my own authority, I have expressed from the purity of myself, if you will, the very self of myself, what it is, and then there's more of an authority in that one.
Yeah, I think that an Incipit puts the authority of self into it, whereas something that is told to you, you know, I'm going to tell you about these lies. Well, yeah, well, what if I don't believe you? Or are you trying to tell me that this is the way I should or would or whatever else be alive? So it is better, in my opinion, Incipit, because it is something that you choose and then move forward with.
Okay, question for you, since you said that. And, let's see. You said in talking about the golden thread, you could always go another way. My question is, especially in light of the fact that you've lived four different lives, and they're all radically different, I mean, in essence, do you really go a different way? Because to me, they all end up being... there's a constancy within these constancies.
Yeah, but Roger said that you can always cut up film and splice something else in and go a different way.
Was that the expression or the self? Because the expression I understand completely, you can cut that. The self is like you can't not express yourself. In a sense, to me, it's like you can't not express your Incipit.
Well, I think that... in some of the readings that I remember from way back, it was that you could absolutely splice in and go a different way. In fact, at one point it said that actually you could just absolutely give up the self, the whole thing, and just become information scattered in the universe that has no...
Like a soul going out of existence?
Yes.
Did you ever find those transcripts?
I've got a book of transcripts from the 80s and the 90s, yes.
I was just curious. Okay.
But, I mean, it's not on a computer. It's in a book.
Yeah, right. I was just curious. I know there was, like, thousands of hours of this stuff, and I was just curious. I remember at one point Roger was looking for it and couldn't find some of it.
Well, some of it I have that he didn't have.
I see. So that's a really good point. Yeah, that forward view, backwards view, forward view, and the authority part, that's a really critical ingredient.
No, I'm not quite clear now. I do understand the looking back at and the beginning of, and how I came alive there, my authority comes into play. Do I have that correct?
So far.
Okay. And how do we come to the Emprise then?
Well, we're not there yet.
Oh, okay.
But it's an obvious question, and that's kind of what I'm saying is,
yeah.
To me, it's all boggled up in my mind is like, what's the difference in these pieces? So we're getting there.
Okay.
Anybody want to add anything else on this? Okay. So choosing how you... Go ahead.
I said, no, not yet.
Article 416 pretty much lays it out, I think, kind of clearly, at least... Well... No, it's written a bit like a tossed salad. If you reorganize some of the main statements, what you come up with is that... choosing how you'll be alive, that is your personal key of eternalness, which unlocks eternal knowing to you. Okay? And I highlighted those two words, eternal knowing, because I found that to be, knowing Roger, that's pretty probably different than Incipit or Golden Thread. Correct me if I'm wrong, Misty.
Oh, I think that's true.
Because he wasn't one for syllables in any way.
No.
I mean, synonyms. Sorry, not, yeah, he was way for syllables, but synonyms.
Yeah, way for syllables.
No two words.
But synonyms, right.
No two words meant the same thing. So, okay, we're talking eternal knowing. And you've got to really read carefully to get that, if you not know what you're listening for, because the ink is just as black as all the other words. There's no highlight on that. So you don't necessarily know if you're... reading without knowing, you don't necessarily know we're talking about something different, but I think we are. And in 416, what he goes on to say is, if you reorganize the paragraphs, this is not in laid out order, so your personal key of eternalness unlocks eternal knowing to you. Without your key, you cannot unlock and enliven that knowledge being eternal knowing. And you cannot understand being eternally alive and empowered until you declare how you will be alive eternally. So I want to stop right there because, I mean, there's more to it, but I'm just, so I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Golden Thread, that will give you, looking back, a commonality, like in a bit, like a fallback position, a little bit, higher, a little, what do you call it, better, more desirable, personally desirable, more personally meaningful fallback position than language. And it gives you a constancy to live, but it doesn't necessarily awaken you to eternal knowledge, eternal awareness. It could. I mean, obviously, it's past lives. It's probably supposed to work that way. In fact, as I know, it's supposed to work that way. So I don't quite know why... your personal key of eternalness, could your golden thread become your personal key of eternal knowing?
There's something I want to throw in here. I've been dwelling on the 112 in K. Well, actually 111, because that's where we left off. Have you ever considered yourself to be a memory packet of uniquely assembled data information before? And the 112 talks about an affinity process or pattern to which and through which every cell of your body and every belief and action of yourself and life is finely tuned. Is yours insipid? That is carried with you at all times and situations throughout your life. This is not a pattern of who you are becoming or trying to become. Your insipid is a reminder of who you are.
Yep.
To me, what I gathered a point of view or an understanding over time that any one of these things, the golden thread, a declaration, the M prize, and then listening to what you read out of 416, says that in the absence of any one of those or combination of them, you don't know anything other than memory. You'll have a body existence. It's only through declaring yourself as an eternal being. You reminded me of that the other day when we were speaking, Andrew, that a very fundamental declaration is I came alive as an eternal being. And in the absence of that declaration, there is no way anybody could see themselves and access memory and know their own eternalness.
I thought about that and disagreed.
You disagree?
Yes.
Why do you disagree?
Okay. I thought about that. So here's my what do you call it? Revelation from my reading. The golden thread of my reading was showing living and showing fineness. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought, I agreed with you, Pat, at first I thought, you know, you could live your whole life with that as your commonality, your constancy, your point of reference, you know, living as you truly desire, you could live that, wait, back up. You can't live that. Well, I was thinking at first, even if you did live fineness, right, everything is fineness, all that, or all things are goodness or whatever, you might be able to go a whole lifetime and never stumble across eternal. And so in that case, maybe I agreed with Roger, you would be just living loner body stuff. However, if you live these declarations, goodness, fineness, etc., like he always instructed us and admonished us to do, you don't go forward. It's like you make a choice, right? And you ask yourself if you'd be willing to do that forever and ever. And if you really lived your life in that way, you make a choice. One day you come across this thing about death or eternal. And you might make a choice that says, now wait, living all things in goodness. Oh, wait, no, you don't say that. You say, would I be willing to do that forever and ever? Well, no, I wouldn't be willing to do death forever and ever. Make another choice. You know, maybe I live on as an eternal being. Yeah, I'd be willing to live that forever and ever. And that being something you'd be willing to live forever and ever, kind of in a reverse, out of cause and effect process, then reveals to you what, to you, fineness or all things in goodness really is. And so in that regard, living your life that way, I think you probably very well could come to deciding and living eternally.
Could. And I'm tempted to say, and I will anyway, if a frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his ass. I think part of the issue for me around this kind of discussion is that I remind myself that forever living is a whole nested thing, that it's not linear at all. There's a whole thing, bunch of things that run together. That there isn't one thing that triggers everything. there that the he got us talking about the golden thread so that we begin to see ourselves, a possibility anyway of seeing ourselves as being somehow eternal, and that these past lives are connected in some ways to us. I don't think that he said, okay, you learn that, you're fine. It was he was trying to illustrate to us and give us some ways of beginning to see ourselves in something outside of a body context. And then he's told us many times that he wished he hadn't brought up the notion of purpose, because that
right.
put people down an alley he wished he hadn't taken them. So there's all these things that he came at the same issue from multiple points of view. He talked about that we're a multitude, and that was another way of trying to get us thinking about that we're more than this single little entity that's engaged in some kind of linear process. So all of these things, the emprise, the incipit, the golden thread, all those things, each one of us has the capacity then to take a look at that and say that, yes, this has become clear to me now how I came alive, and now I actively declare that's how I am alive. And as Misty pointed out earlier, that at any point in time, we can alter course. But that even in saying that, I remember that the four before, that we came alive as a four, generically here, and that we can do four in any infinite number of ways and combinations of action and everything else, but the fundamental is the four.
Right?
So that my thing is that I think we can get hung up if we try to get all linear about it.
Okay, I'm not trying to be linear. So what I'm trying to say is, well, I will tell you that in my mind, yeah, and I can understand this for new people coming in. It can be quite a confusing layer of things. What I'm trying to do is, he always said, you got to pull things apart to understand them. I'm not saying they're separate or linear, one causes the other. I'm trying to say, how do they fit together, or what's the difference? Why is each one important that he spends so much time developing it? What does it do for us? So personally, I feel like we're making some good headway here, but, you know, if y'all want to go on, you can stop.
Well, there is. It's amazing how these things work out all the time. I had not taken the time from 2 weeks ago to read ahead from what we would be our starting point today. And I see that there's a bunch more discussion related to the incipit, of course.
Right.
And that I know that in this household, anyway, we've remarked multiple times that Roger had this way of coming at something from many, many points of view and describe it, what it looks like from over here and what it looks like from over there and up here and down there. But it was he was always talking about that central thing. And that I think that their points of view that to every one of us finds ourselves in the center of that.
Are
you still here?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it seemed like you just stopped.
Yeah.
I thought Andrew would jump in and agree or disagree.
No, I agree. I think the reason this comes up, Pat, is when we were doing this 2 weeks ago, nobody could tell me for sure what they were declaring. Statements were being made, But just for clarity, let's find out where we are on the map. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. And I'm so glad you raised that 2 weeks ago. That it was, I think Simone experienced similar to what I experienced was, gosh, I wasn't as clear about that statement as I thought I was. The more we discuss, the more expanded view I end up having of everything we're talking about, and even an expanded view of myself. So this is extraordinarily valuable to keep on talking about this stuff. It's not just read it, you understand it, yep, next one.
Andrew, did you come to these questions after my email?
Oh, I can't. I stumbled on these questions 2 weeks ago. We were talking, and people were sharing their declarations, and I asked, which is this? And nobody could tell me.
Yeah.
And I didn't know.
Because as I wrote you, I reverted mine several times because I think that was Patrick just said. We looked at it at another point of view, and I tried to find wordings that fit that new, how do I say that, these new wordings or this new view. I hope you did understand that.
Well, I wanted to comment on it, but I didn't want to confuse you, so I've been spending my time going through this before I replied.
Yeah, actually, I was waiting for a comment. Yeah.
Sure.
So well, I think that was a point of my unclarity also, because we did over time look at from different views and we used different terms from the language, and it is confusing sometimes.
Okay, so there's a couple different directions we can go here. Do you want to stop and talk about something that we've on more presently, or shall I finish what little left I have of what I put together?
Well, go ahead, Andrew.
I think you should finish.
I can't hear what else got in.
Okay, well, so... All right, so just there's only two other to figure out here. This is just to finish how you'll be alive and then talk about Emprise. So... It says in Article 416, okay, you begin forging your key by declaring how you will be alive eternally. You must declare from memory how you will be alive and always and only be that. So that's starting to sound a little bit like an insipid. Maybe it's not. He says, if you've declared how you'll be alive, that serves as a constant, consistent guide to your expressing. And how you'll be alive is what you are and are expressing. It's a point here. Declaring how you'll be alive in that eternal knowing is available to you from quiescent mind in accordance with memory and your enlivening. Okay, and then he says, I want you to consider that you have declared how you'll be alive eternally and did that years ago. But through the reliance on language we lost. So is there a difference between how you will be alive functionally, the difference being that, you know, you declare from memory, it's a how you'll be alive henceforth, is that the same as insipid? Because when he talked about insipid, he said it will enliven you, in number 91 of K, he says it enlivens you to true listening and entanglement. It's the self-concept that precedes your beginning story. So, it's similar, but I don't know.
I don't know. I'll be quite honest. It seems very similar, but I don't know that it's exactly the same.
Right. Okay. So, well, anyway, what I got then is, if we put just a few of these together, Incipit seems to partner with Beginning Story. Obviously, he did that in K. So you have your Incipit as a concept, and by putting it into a Beginning Story, you then see that in action, right?
Say that again.
You have an Incipit,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, showing others their fineness, discovering how the universe works. I don't know if that was his Incipit, actually, once it was a promise.
That's a promise to me, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, right. See, I got to really, it's going to take more, really looking at this.
Well, if you look at Incipit,
anyway.
Wouldn't it be looking at the first major event in someone's existence and then using that as the Incipit?
I think, yeah, maybe that's how you call out your Incipit through your Beginning Story. I'm not sure. He said you have to declare it from memory, and maybe that means doing a story instead of just saying, aha.
Yeah, I think that it does.
Okay. So Incipit doesn't, it's not your Beginning Story in action. Oh, yeah, it's not your Incipit in action. It is from the Beginning Story.
Yeah, it's that first main idea is the thing upon which everything else is relative to.
Okay, I see. Thank you. All right, that does help. So then that's the, only leaves the M-Prize. And it's effective. I'm just not sure where it fits, so I'll just read you real quick what M-Prize was. A chivalrous adventure, yeah? That's what M-Prize is, defined as in the dictionary. And I guess the way he presented it was, if you experience yourself as eternal being, how could you experience yourself as an eternal being all the time? Because he was saying you can't experience yourself as too incestuous. So you give yourself an eternal M-Prize, and you experience yourself doing that M-Prize. And it is through the M-Prize that you experience yourself every moment of the day, and you can sense and feel you've been doing this for centuries. So it seems to give you that whole sense of an awareness of eternalness continuing. So maybe it's just another tool in the toolbox for the people who find that works better, or maybe it's a different...
So is that an awareness of your eternal being or your physical being?
It's a good question, because M-Prize is, it's this chivalrous adventure. It's something that you...
Right, so that's...
Can't complete the life of the thing.
Just for clarification, isn't the M-Prize something that cannot be done in one lifetime?
Yeah, I added that. That is my presumption, yeah.
Well, that's the main definition I remember, but... Yeah.
So, as Pat said, I did run across this. It's like, yeah, these are just a bunch of things you can use. They're not... One does not oppose the other. Although, what you pointed out, Misty, about the golden thread looking back and the incipit looking forward... And the level of authority, personal authority involved in that, that's actually an interesting realization. So I'm wondering if Incipit, just food for thought, and I'm going to shut up, if Incipit is a different way of expressing what he was trying to say with how you will be eternally alive. That's your key to eternalness. Emprise, I'm not sure how that one, I'm not sure where that one fits.
Well, the emprise, I've always seen the emprise as putting how I will be alive into action.
Right. That's right. I'd wonder about that too, yeah.
The how part sometimes buffaloes me. I'm not sure that I understand it. How I will be alive.
Okay, change it to the way in which I will be alive.
Yeah, and that's like I think of Roger, and I think of some attributes that I can say that, you know, he was creative, he was inquisitive, he was determined. There was a number of attributes that if how I will be alive and the way I'll be alive includes those kinds of things. His emprise maybe was the figuring out how the universe works. But we need to be creative and inquisitive and expansionary and a whole bunch of things in order to bring that to be, for that to be brought to life. So I'm wondering, Missy, if that's part of the how or the way that we have declared we will be alive.
I would think so.
Well, as I recall, how you'll be alive, you really treated those more as nouns than actions. Like how I will be alive as an eternally intimate being. He was alive as an eternal being. Other people, for a while I kicked around, I will be alive as an eternal revelation. And then you do everything relative to that. Those are more nouns than actions. So I don't think that how you'll be alive is then I say it's not the same as insipid. Sounds the same, but Chronicle K says insipid is an action.
Yeah, and it's
number 97, insipid is an action. So I'm sorry if I'm confusing you guys. I didn't mean to. I was hoping to have people figure it out, but I just put it out there for consideration.
No, it always helps to talk about it.
Oh, it does.
Even if I still don't understand.
Yeah.
Well, the most important thing is that the insipid is kind of like letting you know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Misty, I have a question for you. Since you've talked about making this stuff more readily understandable to newcomers and such, are there, you know, one or two of these that would be more easy to get across and the other ones worth maybe just putting on the shelf unless it's for the master class?
Well, you know the golden thread is always an easy one for people to understand.
Yeah.
That one's pretty simple.
So maybe we could call that elementary school.
Yeah. How you will be alive is actually pretty easy to understand also. Now, when you start getting into emprise and into insipid, it becomes a little more of a challenge to understand.
So do you pair, in your mind, does insipid and emprise pair up? One? No, they don't. Between
no.
Story and insipid pair up.
I understand the insipid is for one lifetime.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not take it that way. That's interesting.
Okay.
Well, I'm not saying
you're wrong. Beginning story, I thought that was my mistake, that I put in things that were not prior to this lifetime. Or
okay.
Do I recall that correct, Mystic?
Yeah, I think that incipit is relative to this particular lifetime.
Yes, yes. And only what is
because
prior to this lifetime is actually the first two paragraphs, not concerning this lifetime, is actually the beginning story I wrote now.
Yeah, the beginning
and
story does
why
not...
why I considered it... Pardon?
Yes, the beginning story does not have to do with this lifetime, per se.
Yeah. And that's why I considered it incipit the beginning of this lifetime.
Well,
but
even if you read
that
when Pat read that 112, it has to do with the cell of your body and every belief and action of yourself.
Right. So, it speaks about the longer body, does it?
Yes.
Yeah, my thought, maybe I was wrong about this, I thought incipit and beginning story shake you loose from this body so you can begin getting a sense of your, like, infinite self, your eternal, your abiding, I'm not sure which it is, but the you that has always existed, you just lay it out there and it's like, wow, there's so much truth in that.
Well, yes and no, because what you're doing is every belief and everything else in your cells changes who that body is. It's no longer the loner body, it is the body that you have created.
Correct.
I agree. Yeah, I understand that.
Oh. And so living the incipit is the thing that allows you to leave the loner body behind, in a sense, or allow yourself to reinvent that body relative to your incipit.
All right.
And then that incipit becomes a reminder of exactly who you are.
Well, I'm reading 113. The final statement in 113 is you don't have an incipit. You are an incipit.
Right.
And it's with every belief, attitude, thought, belief, word, and action that that incipit is brought alive.
And in doing that, we create the body that we are.
Yeah.
The communion, the whole thing.
I don't know how this fits in, and maybe I misunderstood Roger when he put this out a couple years ago, I think it is. A couple, 3 years even, maybe. I remember him on one of the Monday calls that he asked, would it be okay, or words to that effect, this is the first time you've ever been alive. You don't have any past lives. This is it. You've come alive. It's the very first time you've never been alive before. And are you okay with that? Yeah. And I don't think I really responded at the time, but I thought about that and thought about that and thought about it, still think about it. And that, I guess this part of this thinking led me to talk about...
You're fading on me, Patrick.
Difficulties we can get into if we go at this in too linear of a way. That a lot of what we're talking about and have talked about tonight is relies heavily on the forward arrow of time. And I often get this sense that it's this rippling, erupting type of thing that as individuals, I think it's even hard to explain it, but it's I think we limit our understanding if we try to put this, these past lives even. I think Roger got to the point, or I heard him say, and I, or I interpreted what he said to mean that, well, this is not really your past life. That's what you picked out of from your body memories, memories of your body and your genetic heritage. You picked stuff that you fancy and want to pattern yourself on, or you want to pattern yourself or pattern yourself on. And you never did live that life, and you didn't live it, and it's not you. And that's part of my reasoning to try to stay out of thinking these things together in a linear way.
Pat, if you're indicating that I'm trying to link it together in a linear way, I promise you I'm not. And I'm not meaning to lead anybody down that road. I'm just trying to understand how these any one person puts all these pieces in their life together, or if they're not supposed to put them all together, just one at a time.
Well, the thing that I mull around in my mind sometimes is there really is no linear, because from one moment to the next, they're separate and can be totally different than the moment that preceded it. It's just that everything changes forwards and backwards relative to your thoughts, beliefs, everything. And your memory and everything else changes with that too. So I don't know that I didn't live a totally different existence a moment ago, because all I have is memory and it could be totally different. Are you following what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Misty.
Because these are the kind of things that I think about sometimes is, well, yeah, it seems like everything is linear, but there really is no linear.
And I think part of the difficulty, Andrew, and I'm not accusing you of being linear in your thought. I'm sorry if I gave that impression. But I think it's just a consequence of trying to discuss these things within the confines of language.
Right.
That even in talking about them, one thing seems to lead to another thing.
I just thought that they might work, certain ones might work together. And apparently some of them do. Beginning story and incipit being one of them.
Yeah, I think we've all heard at one point or other that there were times when Roger would say, I wish I hadn't raised X. That didn't get across what I wanted to get across. And I think the past lives and the golden thread, from my understanding now, may be one of those things that creates a bit of a limitation.
Which creates a limitation?
What's that?
What creates limitation?
The past lives and the golden thread.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have past lives,
mm-hmm.
then it creates a limitation. And he said very clearly, wasn't your life and you didn't live it.
Why does it create the limitation? I don't follow you.
That if I think that I'm riding on a continuum, that I lived these past lives when in fact I didn't, I'm limited in understanding what's going on.
Do you mean that implies a linear life?
It implies linear, and it implies a highly awareful entity that hops from life to life to life. And Roger made it really clear to me anyway, that doesn't occur.
you know, part of what your the statement you brought up, Patrick, what comes to my mind these days is when you said, he said, or we asked you, or we asked us, you know, consider that this is your first and only life. Is that what you said?
Yep.
The question to me is, which you was he talking about? Because he was always real big on that. You didn't say what you you're talking about. So in this regard, I think I can understand that from the point of view of the loner self and still have an eternal self going on with that. But I don't know, that's how he meant it.
Well, I think there is a vested interest in wanting an eternal self that survives death intact and comes alive again intact. I think there's a vested interest in that. And I eventually developed the impression that that's not what he was talking about, that we do not survive death intact and come alive intact. Like so that you could recognize
you speak up, I didn't hear that.
That the what I think he was getting at was far more complex in a sense and at the same time extraordinarily really simple. And I think the best way I can come into it is to try to hang some of this on the concept of that we are a multitude. And at the time, I didn't have a very good sense of what he was talking about when he raised it. But as you pointed out a moment ago, Andrew, he played with that view. And it was up to us that if we were unclear, we should have asked him, what you are you talking about? And he'd always respond whenever I asked, was, which one do you think? And if you, Andrew, are a multitude, where will you draw any kind of confines around that? And limit yourself to two or three lives.
Well, I don't know that he was terribly clear himself about multitude. It's something he and I were kicking around a bit in his latter days, but I wondered sometimes if he was just experimenting to see if we would grab onto that and then give him some new way to talk about it. It's an intriguing idea, but I'm not sure he was particularly clear about it.
So I'm with you on that. He really didn't chase that one down very hard.
Nope. Just threw it out there once in a while and watched us get upset and moved on.
Yeah, but he always talked about himself as a we.
Yep.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And he even showed us how to do that. Yeah, that's not a problem for me.
And also in post-life readings, he always started, we give you a life that shows such and such.
Yep.
In mind, he did. Yeah. But I am thinking right now that maybe the golden thread and the emprise is somehow a view of the eternalness that we are, or what you said, Patrick, this is the first life. Maybe we become now aware that our life has been already, and we blink in and out, and these are stations, let's say, in that one life.
Episodes.
Yeah.
Episodes. That's the nice word, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And
I
that's another way
that.
Of showing of the eternity.
And
I don't
multitude.
Know. Multitude, yeah. I I like the multitude. I really did like that as he introduced it. Yeah.
See what you've done, Andrew? You got us talking the whole bunch.
Hmm. Why, you guys carried it. That's great.
Yeah, we're getting more participation. This is pretty damn good.
Yeah, and actually, I find out that I'm not clear on things I thought I am. Yeah.
I want us to all be pretty clear about what we're talking about, whether we just, you know, for our own lives, use just a few of these for now, or whether we know how to put them all together as a, oh, this is what I'm referring, this context or that context, whatever. That's my desire here.
Well, you've expressed this for quite a while now, Andrew, about wanting to get this, in a sense, charted, so we see where things are.
Because I'm planning on, like, introducing this to some new people, and I'd sure as heck like to know, saying to the point that I'm not getting confused in myself. What I see is people sending in these statements of their declarations, and it's pretty unclear, and certainly using language that is self-defeating.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, do you remember, Andrew, earlier in the readings here in Origin, there was a fair amount of description of I guess the process of coming alive.
What begat what? What is this? This is a that which begat to this.
And there was a statement that he wrote about the concept came alive as a concept.
Right.
And I've loosely linked that to how I came alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then coherent with what Simone was talking about here a minute ago, that in this lifetime I've created a new incipit, but it's how I came alive, even originally came alive as a concept. I think that remains intact.
I do too.
And that the incipit is something that we will adapt probably multiple times in any given lifetime. But the incipit would not be detached from the original concept.
I'm not sure if I just agreed with you or I just said, I heard you. I'd have to hear it again.
Well, could just summarize, came alive as a concept.
Right.
That concept would be consistent over expressions of it. Didn't even want to use time, but came alive as a concept, and that would be consistent in all expressions. And in each expression, we would prepare or declare. Actually, just, given that a concept, incipit, we are an incipit, we don't have an incipit, that as we come into every existence, our uniqueness is the concept, and we will be bringing that concept alive, and as we are bringing that concept alive, that is, we are the incipit. It's not something we sit down and talk about, I don't think.
So are you willing to say the concept and incipit are two different words for the same thing?
Coming alive as a concept and then actualizing the concept emergent is insipid.
All right, I guess I could go with that. That's what I was wondering.
That's where I'm coming to based on our conversation tonight. It's helped me refine a bunch of my thoughts. But yeah, come alive as a concept. And then as we actualize that concept, what is emerging is insipid. That's one of us has an insipid.
Is insipid. For my simpler mind, so you know where I'm tracking, I go with the insipid is just another word for the concept. Functionally, I'm just saying a dream starts off with a insipid. Hey, here's what we can talk about. It's not different to me than a concept. And if it is, Misty, please, you know, clear me up on that. And then it just goes on and expresses that.
Well, you and I both know that he absolutely did not believe that two words said the same thing.
I understand.
So
I just, you know, at this point, since
they're close enough that but one is that insipid is something that has occurred in short, a first complete story event thing, okay? Whereas a concept is something that is from the very beginning.
Oh, okay, right. Back up here. So he used the word concept in this book, and he uses insipid in this book, so maybe he does mean different things. I didn't know if he's playing with a different word to try and get it across, so okay.
No, in stuff like that, no. No, he would not.
Okay.
I mean, he likes to get synonyms for getting an idea across but not changing the idea. But when it comes to an absolute idea, forever living idea, he's not going to synonym it.
All right. Okay, Pat, so then I'm back with you on that one.
Okay, so that I'm with Misty on that one, and that there...
I hardly can hear you, Patrick.
Okay, I lean back to look at something. Yeah, that's the... I still keep on saying that the insipid is a dynamic thing, that it's not set and there you are, that it's I think that's where the authority comes in, that we can shape it as we live it. I keep on coming back to it. As we live, what the emergent is and it's insipid, and we decide how we will live as being alive. We're through words, through actions, through thoughts, through belief, through attitudes and emotions. Those are how we express life, and we make a choice of even the basic forever living choice is, would I be prepared to be and live that eternally? And as we live those things, I keep on coming back that that emergent is insipid, and that will and it'll continue to be dynamic. And as we continue to express life,
but concept
given
is
that we are the insipid.
Yeah,
it's not something we write. It's we are the insipid, and as we live, We are expressing the insipid.
And the insipid is the thing that the concept is a constituent of. And
Yes. The
concept is also something that A hit B hit C, the whole thing, until you have an emergent, which is the concept. And that is what comes into life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, can you say that again, please?
concept is like, remember when he had the balls and he said, well, A hit B and B hit C, and enough of them came together to the point where they had an emergent, a concept.
Yes.
And the concept comes into life, and it's that concept which is a constituent of the incipit. Doesn't that make sense?
The concept is a constituent,
That's the way I see it.
And as time goes on and we live, we are adding new constituents all the time. And the emergent will be a changing incipit.
So, Pat, isn't that an interesting way to explain how you've never been alive before and you will never be alive again because you current are an emergent? And as you live and do more, the new death might be the new emergent, in which case Pat no longer exists, but that new being, which is eternal in that. There's sort of a going on, but it's through emergence or transfiguration. So it's a different being. Maybe that's what Roger was trying to tell us.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
Somebody write that down, because I need to read that again.
Say it slower, and I write.
Could you repeat that?
Which who? Pat or me or who?
Well, Andrew. No, you. Andrew, you.
Okay, I'll try. So,
she's on an open mic.
Pat was talking about. Somebody's on echo and I can't hear myself.
You can reheat the one in the bedroom.
Okay, try again.
No way.
Pat was talking about. Concept. Starting as a concept, sorry, that's linear, but starting as a concept is a constituent. Tell me if I'm wrong here,
for
Pat.
The average,
of an incipit.
Yeah, for the ever-changing incipit, yeah.
Is that true, Pat?
Thanks for me.
Incipit is ever-changing. As in the process of transfiguration, emergent, maybe I'll just call it emergent transfiguration.
Emergent, to me.
Which equals a new being, a brand new incipit.
That's never been alive.
Hell, dude, I don't know how to say these words, but. It's what? Go ahead.
That's never been alive before.
Been alive before, and will never.
That never.
Alive.
Yeah.
Well, because the emergent has never been alive before.
Yeah, the emergent is different at every second.
That's right, Misty. I was wondering if anybody would notice.
Yeah, that's been one I've struggled with for a long time, trying to just get that one going. Emergent is different. In every sense. So this incipit being has never been alive before, will never be alive again. Emergent is different every moment, and I guess what I said then as it continues to live. And what'd you say, Pat? Add to the concept?
No, with all the action of living are added constituents.
Added constituents that, and from that is a new, emergent from that. Can I even say that?
Yeah, from or of. I like to use of, it's not.
I got you on that, yeah, it's a little less languagey. Emergent of that. That is a new dynamic, or ever dynamic. I think that's a word you use.
I seem to say it before.
Dynamic, insipid.
And now you could,
starting to sound like Russian.
As Nick said, you could pick any knobs you want, and it's new and never been alive before.
What's that again? Any knobs you want and what?
You could pick any knot you want, and whatever knot you pick, the life and the insipid that you see has never been alive before.
So what if I pick a knot from 2,000 years ago, and I suddenly see a continuing being in that? Does that work?
No.
Okay.
Never been alive before, and that means never
Correct.
Been alive before.
Correct.
And the insipid has been dynamic and ever-changing.
Correct. Can I not pick a point at 2,000 years ago and live an eternal being that's never been alive before, though it seems like it has? I guess it's pretty twisty.
Could be, but I suspect.
Well, pick any nonce you want. You got me on that.
Yeah. The Misty pointed out just a moment ago that every second, you know, the fellow that's talking to you right now, it had snippet, it's dynamically emergent. It's been emergent, and it's never been here before.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And in that sense also fits in the idea to me that this is the first life I ever lived. Every second actually is the first life I ever lived, because it's a new insipid emerged out of what I have done until now.
Yeah. Now, the question that I have, and I think Andrew has, is that, is there a place, a point, a vantage point, where we can actually see and experience some sense of, I can't think of another word at the moment, but some sense of continuity.
Roger was pretty big on that.
And that I think there is, and I think that it's got something to do with fully embodying and expressing the condition of godness. I suspect from that perspective, this will hang together very nicely.
See, so where I always took it from here was, okay, fine, you die and you're dead. Now you're just stuff in the universe. Unconscious, inanimate, not alive, memory, data, information, universe. Some new being comes along and may or may not pick up some of you and continue living that. But in any case, who gives a crap? It's meaningless to you. If some new being decides to pick up some of your data information and make use of it, that's still no meaning for you, because you're just as non-existent as you ever were. So I don't get how this is meaningful to anybody, if that's the take.
Well, then that's what I can't imagine. Roger spent all those years trying to express to us what he saw so that we could end up simply reverting to a concept, and that's that.
I hold the possibility that Roger got really invested at the end here in expressing out his concept or language, or whatever theory he was working on, and I don't know that he came to something that he liked a whole lot, but I could be wrong. I also hold the possibility I'm very wrong. He just didn't seem to be happy with what he'd come to. You guys correct me if I'm wrong about that.
I have a theory on that.
Go for it.
And I don't think I want to talk about it tonight.
Okay.
It's getting late here. But that's a I've been able to experience what I think he was talking about in little pieces here and there, and it definitely the sense that I had when I've been able to move myself there is to that it transcends all the kind of details that we're talking about now. Everything just makes so much sense. And to an expansive viewpoint, extraordinarily expansive viewpoint.
What, pardon? What did you say?
An extraordinarily expansive point of view.
Said, try out what, or think about what it means for you personally. Yeah.
Oh, in the end, that's all that counts.
Yeah.
But he also said that you are always, in every moment, creating your next episode.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I do believe that we just don't quite have the full picture of what he was talking about, but that we don't just and are just shit out there in the universe that somebody may or may not use.
Okay. Right. I know you've held that position for a long time. I just lacking something that holds that together for me.
Well,
you actually, it won't come from the outside.
Okay, well, the time being what it is.
This has been a fantastic evening. Thank you so much.
So once again, we will pick up at 1:11.
We didn't read further than 1:10, did we?
No, we'll pick up again at 1:11, which I have arrows to for a lot of dates. So... And,
alrighty. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah.
This is Andrew. I credit you with creating the initiative to get this going. Thank you.
So with that, I will say.
Sure, it goes together.
Yep. Good night for now.